Hi, I'm Elena.
And I'm Yasmin. Welcome to Dissecting Disney,
the podcast where we either make you loathe or love your favorite childhood movies. Just a trigger warning before we start off this episode, we will be talking about sexual assault and rape, so viewer discretion is advised.
Welcome back, listeners. Today's episode is going to be Sleeping Beauty Untold, and we hope to make Untold a recurring series where we just talk about the origin stories, disturbing origin stories of Disney movies, because a lot of Disney movies actually have pretty horrible, not suitable for kids origin stories. So Sleeping Beauty was released in 1959. It was one of the classics along with Cinderella and Snow White. It's actually the last Disney adaptation of a fairy tale for a while because it actually underperformed at the box office. And it was also the last movie that Walt Disney was directly involved in.
So Sleeping Beauty has quite a few versions as its origin stories, and we kind of can't really trace back to what is the most, similar to the current Disney story that we have. The Sleeping Beauty storyline is described as a 410 tale type in the Arne Thompson Uther Index of fairy tale or like folklore classification, meaning it includes a princess who falls asleep and is awakened by reversing the magic. So you can see that this isn't strictly talking about the Sleeping Beauty stories, talking about a whole like classification of stories that have the same story type. And if you didn't know, The Sleeping Beauty by Walt Disney is kind of made up through a whole mess of discarded ideas from Snow White and Cinderella, which I thought was quite funny. But for example, like how the prince was kidnapped by Maleficent, that was meant to be in Snow White. So the first recorded version of the Sleeping Beauty story type is Perceforest, and it's set in medieval 14th century. It's a piece of anonymous prose romance with interludes of poetry that describes the fictional origin of Great Britain. And tied into that is the story of Zelandine, the princess of Zealand, who falls in love with Troilus. So Zelandine's father sends Troilus to prove his worth, and during that, Zelandine falls into an enchanted sleep. Troilus basically rushes back to Zealand and kind of prays to these goddesses, which I won't go into. It's like Venus and Themis and all a bunch of goddesses. And so he kisses Zelandine, despite being warned by reason and discretion, as he's heard of his healing power. But then the goddess Venus tells Troilus to lie with Zelandine, and so he does. So that means that he has sex with her when she's unconscious. And he also exchanges the same rings that they exchanged long ago, just kind of like, you know, saying like, oh, we're technically married, so I can have sex with you even though you're unconscious. And 9 months later, Zelandine's child awakens her by sucking on her finger. And it is revealed that the goddess Themis cursed the first thread of linen that she would spin, and she would not awaken till it was sucked out. So basically, Themis was just super salty because she didn't get a knife in her banquet, and she got really angry. I still don't really understand. But Zelandine realizes that Troilus is the father of her children, or child. Child is child. And yeah, she found out through the rings and runs away with him. And Zelandine mourns her rape in the story, and her child gets kidnapped by an old woman. And that's basically the end of this story.
That was very intense.
It's quite tragic. I know. It's like a part of his story. Like the whole story, it's crazy. And she's somehow related to Sir Lancelot. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds like it has Roman influences because of like goddess Venus, for example, is the Roman name for Aphrodite.
Yeah, and I guess because it's the origin of like Great Britain has a lot of Roman influences as well. It was before Great Britain was formed. So yeah, it's fun. But however, we have another very interesting story that has adapted from Perceforest.
Yes. So The Sun, the Moon, and Talia is an Italian fairy tale written in 1634 by Gambatissa Basile. Not sure if I'm saying that name right, but
I think you butchered that.
Yeah, I probably that probably is not how you pronounce it. I'm so sorry, Mr. Basile. You can still see very much of Persephoras in Sun, Moon, and Talia, but the goddess element of it, it has been taken out. So in Sun, Moon, and Talia, the king and queen just had a daughter, and they invited fortune tellers and astrologers to tell them of the girl's future. And this group of counselors says great danger will come to Talia by a splinter of flax. So the king decided to ban all flax and hemp all over the kingdom so that no harm can come to his kid. But then when Talia was 16, she came across a woman spinning flax on a spindle. And she tried it out because she's never seen this thing before since it's been banned in her kingdom. And then the flax goes into her finger and she falls into a death-like sleep. And the old woman flees because she knows that she is going to be implicated in, like, the death of the princess. And Talia's father decides to lock her up in a room forever and never see her again because he just gets so sad when he looks at her. And anyway, a few years later, a different king found the castle in which Talia was locked in. And he was so attracted to her beauty that he rapes her while she's asleep. So here we kind of see the similarities with Persephoras. Anyway, 9 months later, Talia gives birth to twins while asleep. And the baby couldn't find her breast to take milk from. So they suck on her finger and they drew out the flax, basically. And Talia wakes up and she lives with her kids in the locked up castle. The rapist king returns some time later and falls in love with Talia. However, he's already married, and one day he says Sun, Moon, and Talia in his sleep, and his wife, the queen, asks his secretary to tell her everything that happened, and then this queen ordered the cook to kill Sun and Moon and cook them into a meal. And she decided to give this meal to the king while taunting him because he just ate his own kids, right? She brings Talia to court and she wants to burn Talia. But then the king was like, no, you're not burning anyone. I'm going to burn you and the secretary and the cook. But then the cook was like, oh, actually, I saved your kids and I actually just fed you lamb. And then I think the queen presumably was burned, although that wasn't mentioned in the story, and Talia and the king marry, and they lived happily ever after.
And another very similar story to this is Perrault, the Sleeping Beauty of the Wood, and this actually came before Basile's. This was written in 1528, and it's from France, and it holds the second part like Basile's version. It kind of starts off different. The king and queen were finally granted a beautiful baby girl after years of trying and invited 7 fairies for her christening and gifted the fairies with utensils. I don't know what's with people and utensils. It's apparently very nice. And the oldest fairy, who was thought to be dead, becomes very salty that she wasn't invited and puts a curse on the child. So the curse was she will prick herself on a spindle and will die on her 15th birthday. But a good fairy tried to reverse the curse. She couldn't reverse it fully, but instead of her dying, the princess will sleep for 100 years and a prince will wake her up. So the king, alike Sun, Moon, and Talia, burned all the spindles, banned it, decided to get rid of it fully. I don't know how they sewed their clothes after that. But on her 15th birthday, the princess was venturing through the castle and found an old woman spinning. And she pricks herself after trying to spin and falls asleep. And the good fairy places the rest of the castle, except the king and queen, under the same curse so that they can wait on the princess when she awakens. And also, a forest starts growing around the castle, which blocks it off from the rest of the world. I don't know why they'll do that. But 100 years later, a prince from the family that overtook the throne enters the forest that opens up for him magically. I don't know why, it was just like parted and like closed behind him, and was there to wake the princess up. So he was just there to wake her up. Once he was there, the princess woke up. No rape involved, which is a much more pleasant story. They fall in love and marry that evening and have 2 children sometime after dawn and day. So unlike Sun and Moon. Well, kind of similar to Sun and Moon. But once the original king dies, the prince announces his marriage to the awakened princess. And this is very similar to Basile's version after that. They have the whole cannibal story, but with the ogre's mother-in-law of the princess. And she wanted to eat the children and wanted to eat the queen after. And I don't know, crazy stuff. But in the end, prince found out that the ogre's mother-in-law wanted to eat his whole family. So she throws herself into a vat. Once she found out that her son knew the terrible things that she's doing. And yeah, kind of similar, but I think I like this route a little bit better than the whole rape story.
So the next adaptation that we're going to talk about is probably the one that Disney took inspiration from the most, since it's a Grimm's Brothers retelling. And as we know, Disney loves taking fairy tales from the Brother Grimm stories to turn into animated movie adaptations. So this one is called Little Briar Rose, and it was written in 1812. This one doesn't have a second part because Disney thought that it was too gruesome. And also, by the way, the second part starts off from the cannibalism. It's also German inspired because, as you might already know, the Grimm's brothers were German.
So the story has the same tragic beginning with Perrault, with how the king and queen wanted a child for very long, but they couldn't get a child, and now they have this beautiful baby girl. So the king invited the wise women to bless their child with these gifts until the 13th wise woman crashed a party, just like the 8th fairy. And she cursed the child because she was really salty that she wasn't invited. And there was the same curse of how she'll prick herself in a spindle when she turns 15 and will die. But this was reversed by the 12th wise woman who hasn't given her gift, and reverses it to 100 years of sleep instead of death. And so the spindles were burnt again, but little Briar still had to do the same thing on her 15th birthday. So she gave spinning a try and conveniently fell asleep on a bed next to the spindle. And the rest of the kingdom fell asleep too. So this is quite different from the Perrault version because the whole kingdom falls asleep. And a thorn hedge grew around the kingdom. So I like the castle, but the whole kingdom. And this legend of this beautiful princess sleeping in a tower circulated around, I guess, the world. And many young men who tried to free her got trapped in the hedge and died. And there's a whole section of how they were trapped and died, which is quite gruesome. But 100 years later, a young prince heard the legend from an old man, and he went there. And the hedge became beautiful flowers wherever he walked, so he could enter with peace. So he entered the tower, kissed Briar Rose. She, along with everyone else, woke up. And, oh, this is where we see the true love's kiss in a way, which is quite interesting because we've talked about this in the past. And we will talk about further in the episode as well. And then they get married, too. And that's the end of the story. It sounds like a very Disney tale, but I guess Disney changed it up a bit to make it a little bit more interesting.
So we thought it would be interesting to draw some parallels and differences between the 1959 Disney movie Sleeping Beauty with these four original stories that we've heard about. As you will be able to tell, the original stories are way more gruesome than what the Disney movie portrayed, and we will talk about them right now. Elena, start us off.
So the Sleeping Beauty of our story is named Aurora after the dawn, well, I guess the sunrise. But her name under disguise was Briar Rose. So how did these names come about? So in the original stories, the Grimm brothers wrote her name as Briar Rose, but Aurora was taken from Tchaikovsky's ballet. But before that, the name Aurora came from the Perrault story because the princess, who was unnamed, had a child, and that was... And her name was Dawn, which in translation to Latin was Aurora. And also we can see in the original Sleeping Beauty, the king and queen had wished for a child for a very long time. And we can see the similarities with the Perrault and Grimm stories, which I guess were quite key factors to like push the story because it showed how important the child is.
The biggest difference is that in the Disney adaptation, they included the three fairy godmothers. And comparing this to the real tale, so Persephoros used the goddess Venus, as Elena mentioned just now, and a few other god-like figures as well. And then Perrault used fairies. And then the Grimm version used wise women. So the original stories didn't involve fairy godmothers at all, but the fairy godmother figure is very on brand with Disney, for example, with Cinderella's fairy godmother. So it makes sense that they added this component into the movie, and especially considering the fact that the three fairy godmothers play a strong maternal role to Aurora while she's not able to be raised by her birth mom. Similar to Cinderella, where her birth mom has passed away and her stepmom is evil. So fairy godmother becomes the central maternal role in her life. Also in the movie, Maleficent curses Aurora because she got offended that she wasn't invited to the celebration of Aurora's birth. This is similar to the Grimm's version, where the 13th wise woman was offended that she wasn't invited to Briar Rose's birth celebration. And in the Perrault one, it was about the oldest fairy being offended as well. So we can see where Disney took this inspiration from.
Why are people so offended about, like, not being invited to things? If I hear that I'm not invited to things, I'm just like, good, I get to stay at home and sleep.
And bake.
So one of the most poignant quotes in the movie is when Maleficent curses Aurora. When she says, before the sun sets on her 16th birthday, she shall prick her finger on a spinning wheel and die. So the idea of the spinning wheel has been around since the Perciforest version. So I think that's quite sentimental. You know, you keep the same little device that, I don't know, basically curses the child. And we see the 16th birthday being shown in the Perrault and Grimm's version the most. 15, 16, around the same. But I don't know, do you think that 16 years old seems a little bit more grown up than 15? Because I feel like 16 is more of a milestone, and 15 just seems like you're a bit more of a child still. What do you think?
I agree, and I think considering the time period this original story was set in, women were treated like adults when they were 16.
It's important to take fact that Aurora also didn't die, because one of the fairy godmothers wished for her to go into a death-like sleep when the curse happened. And we can see this with Perrault and Grimm's as well. One of the fairies or wise women allowed this to happen by reversing the curse but making it 100 years. Because I don't know why that last witch, or I don't know what you want to call it, wise woman fairy, is the most powerful. I don't understand why.
In the Disney movie, the three fairy godmothers disguised themselves as old women who raised Aurora as a kid that they just found in the forest. They raised her without magic at all, and they decided to live like mortals. It actually takes up a huge part of the story, which was very nice, and I think it's a nice addition and substitution to all the horrible things that actually happened in the origin story, because we wouldn't want our kids to be exposed to that. Regarding Philip, Aurora met Philip in the forest because he heard her singing. So the fairy godmothers warned her earlier not to talk to strangers, but Aurora says she's met him before in her dream and starts singing Once Upon a Dream. At the time, Aurora didn't know that this guy she was in love with was Prince Philip, which is surprising, but also not surprising for a Disney movie, I guess. She didn't know his name at all. She just knew his face. So after she met him in the forest, she tells the fairy godmothers that she's in love. And then the fairy godmothers tell her that she's actually Aurora, not Briar Rose, and she's been betrothed to Prince Philip since birth. But because Aurora doesn't even know that Prince Philip is called Prince Philip, she isn't able to make the connection that they might be the same person. In the movie, Aurora meets Philip before the curse comes true, or like before it takes place, I guess. So she meets him before she even gets put into her death-like sleep, which is very unlike the origin story. So in the Grimm and Perrault versions, the prince found her in the castle 100 years after she was cursed. In the Bastille and Perciforest versions, as we know, she was raped by a king that she never met. It's not great that this movie for children shows Aurora talking to strangers and falling in love with them straight away, but I would say it's a step up from the origin story. So I think it's a great thing
that yeah.
they moved away from the sexual assault origin story.
By the way, Perciforest, Troilus knew Zalandine.
Oh, yes, I forgot
that. But he raped her still.
That is not okay.
Don't worry. Still a rapist.
In the movie, the fairy godmothers put all the villagers to sleep when Aurora is sleeping because they didn't want the king to find out that they failed the one task that they were supposed to do. In Persephor's and Basile versions, everyone was awake while Aurora was asleep because she was locked up in a castle and the king found her separately. In the Perrault version, everyone except the princess and her staff were awake. And in the Grimm version, everybody slept, which again is closely linked to the Disney version, as Disney often took inspiration from the Grimm's versions of fairy tales. Also, lastly, Maleficent kidnaps Prince Philip in the story, in the Disney movie, which is something totally new to the movie, not at all in the origin story. And I think, Elena, you said that this is actually an idea from Snow White that got left out.
Yeah, and it's a wild one. I really like that idea. And she turns into a dragon!
Yes, she turns into a dragon. She's actually...
Which I think is another story arc.
Yeah, she's a very prominent villain, I would say, in Disney. So in conclusion, the origin story of Sleeping Beauty is very screwed up. We are eternally grateful that Disney had some brains and made it more suitable to kids. Sleeping Beauty has been criticized by so many critics, saying that it is the least feminist or like the most anti-feminist Disney movie since Aurora doesn't really have an agency throughout the movie. That's an entire separate discussion on its own, but I would just like to point that out since this movie does get a lot of criticism and it also underperformed in the box office movie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed reading all these different stories today, partly because they are quite different from the Sleeping Beauty that I grew up with. And it's really interesting to see how, like, the story has developed over time, especially with the Persephor's version. I think in, like, my free time, I'll definitely, like, you know, read up on Persephor's, although it might be very hard for me to read because, you know, it was written in 1300s, 1400s, around there.
I think this is a great example of how stories evolve over time and how, like, a large company like Disney can change the narrative, I suppose, on a story that was meant to be totally different.
It's quite strange to think because before Disney made this animation, probably people knew the story of Sleeping Beauty as it is, as in like the Grimm Brothers version or like the Perrault version best. I think Disney holds a really large idea now of like most people of what Sleeping Beauty actually is. So just like, yeah, once again, it shows how strong Disney has like influenced society or modern day culture in the idea of Sleeping Beauty and not acknowledging the fact that loads of these other stories exist as well.
That's the end of the episode. We hope you like this untold series. Let us know your thoughts in our Instagram post.
And let us know if you want more of these, because we have a lot of like good ideas coming up as well.
Yes, we have to do one on Cinderella, because that's pretty vile as well.
Oh, and Hercules. Oh my gosh, that's a whirlwind of a story.
Hercules Mulligan!
Shut up.
If you like this little Disney rant, you can follow us at Dissecting Disney on Instagram and Disney Dissect on Twitter to keep up to date with our latest episodes and endeavors. Tune in every Friday for new episodes.